Hello and welcome to Care Insights with the Outstanding Society, the podcast channel created by the Outstanding Society to share and celebrate best practice whilst raising the profile of the social care sector. The Outstanding Society is a community interest company and membership is free to all, not just those who have achieved an outstanding rating. If you would like to join, please visit our website or follow the links in this episode. The Outstanding Society was thrilled to be back at the Care Show in October 2023, hosted at the NEC Birmingham, where we had the pleasure of presenting the Learning Lounge. The sessions held over the 2 days received impressive attendance. This recording features one of those insightful sessions. We eagerly anticipate meeting you all at the upcoming Care Show, taking place at the XL London on April the 24th and 25th. To secure your complimentary ticket, please visit www.careshowlondon.co.uk/TOS or simply click on the link in the episode details.
Right, so it's complicated. Taking really challenging situations within a care home environment, within a domiciliary care environment, and using those to evidence outstanding practice. And these are things that normally we're terrified of. They're complicated. We don't want to deal with them. But actually, these are really brilliant opportunities to show what your service is doing and how you do it in order to show the regulator how good you are at the point of inspection. If I just go down the line and we'll let everyone introduce themselves first and then we'll dive on in.
Hello, good afternoon everyone. I'm Alistair. I am the head of engagement and spiritual care in Nightingale Hammersmith, which is a charity that has 2 sites in London, one in South London and one in North London, and it's great to be here. Thank you.
Hi, Ruth French. I'm a director of the Outstanding Society and I own 8 nursing and residential homes across East Anglia.
Hi, I'm Cathy Amos and I'm head of the customer marketing and development at Braves, which is a food service provider.
But you're also the queen of food in general, aren't you, really, in the sector? Well done. Right, so this is going to be a bit of a workshop format, so have we got another mic flying around, or is this it? No? Okay, fine, we'll share. Ruth, Cathy, Alistair, one of you, throw it away. And Zoe, you might be doing a bit of running around. So what the idea is I'm going to pitch a scenario to you, and we want everyone basically to come up with how you would handle it and what you would do in an evidence perspective, a care plan perspective, to really show outstanding practice, keeping the person that's involved right at the center of your idea. So this one is really fantastic because we've got experience from Nightingale Hammersmith and we've got experience across the sector on the panel with this one. So we've got a Jewish resident. He comes into your care home. Now, I'm not a predominantly Hasidic home, or I don't really cater to all Jewish residents, so I've got a very mixed community. They come into the care home and we know that they have observed their religion and their faith and they keep kosher but not orthodox, and they keep kosher at home and outside of the home. This resident lives with a lack of capacity and lives with Alzheimer's and dementia. There's a DOLS in place, there are pin codes on the door on the unit that they live in, and there's an established power of attorney for health and welfare as well as finance. Every morning the resident is seeing the food trolley that goes past and they're asking for a bacon sandwich. What do you do? What do you do, Ruth?
Well, I think it is really tricky because we know that this resident doesn't have capacity. We know there's an LPA in place. So I think it is really important to understand what this person's wishes would have been before they lost capacity, and understanding how they've lived their life until that point. So I'm going to throw that in as a starter for 10.
Well, then let's go for a winner for 20, Alistair.
I mean, it's a very interesting scenario because I think if it was somebody who really kept kosher, I can't imagine that within their life history they would have wanted to have bacon. But if they're living in a community where that's what's on offer, then there is a likelihood that we might want to offer it to them. Because if you go back to the time during the war when a number of Jewish people, for example, were evacuated. You know, all the rules that were associated with kosher were broken because people had to live, they had to eat, and they had to enjoy life. And so there's a question around the balance of how does this person feel? I mean, I would want to test out the question of their kind of kosher desire. What does that mean to them? Because, you know, if they were kosher, then they would be living in a home where they would have a separate area for milk food, a separate area for meat. And obviously in this environment, all of this is probably mixed together. So I would say there would be a question that you'd have to say, well, why does this person want to live in this community if they come from such a strong kosher background? So my gut feeling would be, what can we do to let this person enjoy life? Because actually, I think when you've lost so much through living with dementia, if you smell something, you see something, and it tastes good to you, then go for it. Now, that's controversial from a Jewish perspective.
It really is, and that's why it's so interesting, because I'm a bit surprised at that, because my first thing would have been, like, call the rabbi. Call the Mishkaya. Find out who's, you know, maybe talk to the LPA and find out where. But actually what you're saying is understand a lot more holistically about what the situation is before you start calling on.
I can give you an experience. I went with a 95-year-old lady to a special event in the centre of London. This is a lady who was living with us for many, many years, accepted all the kashrut that was in our environment. When we went out, I said to her, well, what would you like to have? Guess what she said? A bacon butty. You know, and I think it's all about who are the individuals that we're caring for, because actually, if this gentleman was cognitively alert, he could have that bacon in his room. There's nobody would be patrolling what he was doing in his room. And if he's living in an environment where this is an offer, it's difficult. But I would go for what makes the individual feel fulfilled and happy.
So Kathy, from a food service perspective.
Yeah, I think when I first sort of listened to this, I would have thought, well, you know, they would never have wanted to do this. Their religion wasn't allowed. They would never have eaten a bacon sandwich ever. However, they don't now have the capacity they had before. Actually, do you really want to unsettle them? Do you want to be antagonistic with them? Do you want to upset them? Well, actually, maybe in these circumstances, their wishes have changed, purely because they haven't got the same capacity. But is it not better to let that person live in the moment, live with what's going to make them happy? And so my tendency would be, if that's how they feel and that's where they are now, then to allow them to have that.
In the world that you live in, at breaks in particular, you have a great experience around, at the moment, especially when you've got, I don't want to use the word fake, imitation better. Imitation meats, you've got vegan bacon, turkey bacon, yeah. Things along those sorts of lines. What's the logic? And if there's anyone that's got an opinion, I'd
love to hear opinions on this.
Not Sam.
It's really interesting. If I take about fake meat, they'll be there. There's such a split between the people that say, why would somebody who's plant-based or vegan want to eat fake meat? And then there's the people that say, well, I want to eat fake meat because I want to eat less meat, but I still want to eat stuff that looks like meat. I'd love to hear somebody else's opinion in the audience.
Is it dignified to give somebody fake meat if they're asking for a bacon sandwich? If their LPAs are saying no?
I really don't know. I think it depends on the individual. So I have a wholly different take on this, though. So people here know I'm a sober alcoholic. I've kept sobriety for 33 years, haven't been in treatment. And if I live with dementia, I want somebody to hold that for me if I'm not able to hold it. And I might ask for a drink. It's very likely I'd ask for a drink, given that that's my default. I could very likely ask for a drink. But I really want somebody to advocate for everything that I have held dear to me for my whole life. And I need you to do it when I can. So I have a wholly different take on it.
But Sam, say that's the case and let's say you've got dementia or Alzheimer's or something that's affecting your capacity. Do we turn around and give you the new non-alcoholic Prosecco, or is it you don't drink at all?
I don't drink.
You want Coca-Cola? That's your favorite. Great.
I don't drink alcohol, and so for me, that if you don't advocate for me when I can't do that for myself, that would break my soul. It might make my heart happy for a second, but it would break my soul, and I need you to hold that for me when I can't.
Is that just out of interest? If it's a medical reason, diabetes is a simple one. So somebody forgets they've got diabetes and they might become really unwell if they're given sugar. It's the same kind of thing. So if it's a medical reason, is that a bit different?
Hello, I just wanted to add a different flavour to it.
Totally.
Many years of watching dementia people, they often sort of return to their childhood. I've had people we look after and might be giving them a cup of tea and they say, 2 spoonfuls, please, and the daughter would come and say, my mother doesn't drink sugar, doesn't take sugar. She does now. It's what she used to do. Is there a possibility when this chap was young, he used to sneak out and have a bacon butty with his friends at the football?
And it's true, because I identify as a Hindu. So I grew up in one of the most Jewish areas in London. And I know how many of my friends who will cheekily have like a McRib, because this is when McRibs were at McDonald's, who'd like go and pound back a McRib burger, and they used to love it. But then there's the flip.
I just love the controversy of all this, because it is in some ways a hypothetical situation. It's very unlikely to happen within that kind of framework. But going back to what you said, I had ladies, for example, that lived in the East End of London that used to come to our service, were Orthodox, did all the things that they would do as an Orthodox Jewish person. And a lady would go down the corridor and saying, yes, Jesus loves me. Yes, Jesus loves me. Why? Because when she was living in the East End of London, she used to go along to the East London Mission and she listened to these songs. Her parents said, don't sing them, just mouth them. So you're absolutely right. It's about this whole level of a person's history. I really respect what you're saying. I really respect what you're saying. Because I think the bottom line is it's what's good for that individual. And it's very complex.
I have to say I spent some time a while ago with the Dr. David Shard, who I think some people say is quite controversial. And he's done the Butterfly Project. And he's very much around, you know, people may well revert back to being 19 years of age. So when their husband comes to visit them and they're both in their 80s, she doesn't like this person anymore. She doesn't like some old man coming to say, this is my husband, in her eyes. You know, she's 19 again. And I think that sort of bears out in some of those other ways of thinking as well. But ultimately, when you know a lot about a resident, and if that was their absolute need, you would respect that, because you know that. That's the heart of that person.
So what we learn from somebody with lived experience is that actually the pre-planning is a huge part of this. So making sure that when you're onboarding a resident and bringing them on, making sure you understand their holistic needs, you understand what their wants and wishes have been previously, understanding where they are now, and making sure that they're really well detailed in a preemptive care plan is your saving grace in this case. Having resource to... MDT is a very big word for this, as we mentioned it a minute ago, but having resource of an MDT to understand that should these questions occur, where are you going to go to source that information? Is it your local religious leader? Is it somebody that is within the family and a balanced approach that you can pull and call upon? Or is it just your standard operating procedures or statement of purpose or whatever it is? Where can you source that? So in my mind, in this particular situation, it's a very preemptive planning process. Ruth?
We recently had a couple who were of the Plymouth Brethren religion move into one of our homes. And what this has been for us is actually about educating ourselves, because this was not a religion that any of our staff had any level of awareness of. And when our staff were told, well, actually, this person doesn't have a TV or a radio in their bedroom, the only thing that they're allowed to have is a CD player, because they need to have control over what's being broadcast. And if it were on a radio, something uncontrolled might come to them. And actually, they shouldn't be sharing food with people that they don't attend church with. So actually spending time with their family, understanding what the religion meant to this couple who were no longer able to express their own wishes as they didn't have capacity to do that. That's been a really important education for our staff, because we might think we're being cruel by leaving someone in their room with no stimulation, but actually that was a critical part of their religion.
And so how would you evidence that, that you've supported your team in that learning? What would you do to show the inspector that this is your learning around? Because we do it, let's say, with a trackie. We've got a resident that has a trackie, and we do the training. It's very easy to show that my nurse has been on that training course. Well, how would you do this?
So we actually invited the family to come and to talk to our staff.
Brilliant.
And give them a bit of a briefing about the religion. They didn't want to do that. So what we've
bring a horse to water.
What we've actually had to do is to do our own research, make sure that the family are happy with that, and add all of that to the care plan to give as detailed understanding as possible to our staff. So, look, we've asked, and it hasn't worked out in exactly the way that we would have wanted, but beggars can't be choosers, and we've done everything that we can to make sure that our staff feel fully equipped.
Just really random, we've had a resident recently that we found a training session that we did. We had her mother, who was very willing to give us a training session. But what we did is, rather than allowing them or making the mother come and do it every time we've got new team members in, we've recorded it. And so now part of that individual, if you're going to be placed on one-to-one with this individual, you basically have to sit through this video and make sure that you understand all of that process. Now, it made it really easy because it's on our hard drive, it's on the system. The nurse makes sure that anyone that's allocated to that one-to-one, they've been through that training. We sign it off. We can evidence that they've had essentially a one-to-one training with a mother based on everything that she wants to tell you about the person that they're caring for. Right, so, this is better, I like this one. Right, we're going to move on to a scenario that's kind of interesting for me. We were talking about it yesterday when we launched the Outstanding Diversity Forum, so that's going to be the first ever LGBTQ+ sector-wide forum. So if there's anyone in your service that identifies, they'll be able to join, whether they're a resident, watch it, whether they're a resident, a staff member, or a supplier in the sector. So they're going to be able to get involved with us. Scenario 3, pay attention, kids. So Bob has been living in the service for several years, and in recent weeks, he's expressed a desire to dress as a different gender. He explains that this is something that he used to do when he was younger and would like to remember the feelings and would like to present on certain occasions as a woman. He understands he is not a woman, though he has never felt comfortable as a man, and instead would like to understand more about the new terms he's been seeing all over the TV, such as non-binary or using they-them pronouns. They would like their name to be Bianca when they are presenting as a woman. What do you do? Alistair.
Well, actually, we've had a situation like this very recently.
We've
had a situation like this very recently where we had a gentleman who came to live with us, who was a cross-dresser. He had a partner, a long-term partner, and when he came into the organisation, we were aware that he was gay, but we weren't aware of the fact that he was a cross-dresser. And it was due to the fact that he built a really good rapport with one of our care team that we found a way for him to find his own identity. And it took a lot of work, I'm not going to kid on, it was easy, because I think when we gathered together as a team, people were finding it difficult to understand this, and so we had to do quite a bit of work around supporting the care team, their understanding. One of our managers who was in the household actually identified as being gay himself, and so he took it upon himself to try and really educate the staff team around all the changes that were taking place around identity. Now, this gentleman actually died about 4 weeks ago, and I had the privilege of going to his funeral. And what was so beautiful was that this man previously grew up in an Orthodox family in New York. His father was a cantor, his grandfather was a cantor in the synagogue, and he was also a cantor. When he left New York at 40 years of age, he had to relinquish all that desire to be a cantor in the Orthodox faith. But instead of turning his back, he moved forward and became a cantor in the liberal synagogue. And there were 20 people at his funeral who were there to testify what a wonderful chap he was. But their real remembrance of him was when he had them all dressed up 20 years ago for a Purim party in the local synagogue. And the rabbi said that this gentleman sang a new song. And when he said that, I just burst out in tears, because I thought, this is what we're looking for. We've got to help people understand what that new song is. So my kind of response to this is, we've got to work together. We've got to look at people individually. We've got to do what we can. We've got to be responsive. And we've got to create a degree of normality. And actually, when this gentleman decided to dress as a woman, nobody batted an eyelid.
That's amazing. And it's really remarkable, because whilst Alistair works for a home that provides care to people of the Jewish faith and the Hasidic faith, Alistair, you're not Jewish yourself, are you? But you're head of their spirituality team.
I'm the head of spiritual care. The reason for that is that in a previous life, I was a Salvation Army officer, and therefore was trained in my first discipline in theology and looking after communities. But it's a great privilege that I have the opportunity to look at spirituality in a much wider context. I mean, I've got a rabbi working in South London, a rabbi in North London. In fact, this very moment they're doing a vigil for peace for the situation in Israel. But what we're looking to is the wider context of what gives people a spiritual life within a care environment.
Now, Kathy, you are well, you're a lovely straight white female, but you are a huge ally.
I am.
And Breaks have that amazing Spectrum program, yeah, that I've heard about. But what would it mean to you for having, as an ally, for having friends that might go into care or are in care home environments? How would your feelings around us being able to support them impact on a service as in that perspective?
I mean, I really think it's something that people should be openly talking about. So in our business, yeah, we have a group called Spectrum. We have somebody sort of at senior level, if you like, that owns that group. And then we have members and we have allies. So I'm an ally and we have members. And we have quite a few forums. And we've got, for example, a couple of people whose children are transitioning. So they talk at it from the point of view of being an adult with a child that's transitioning. Got members of staff who have transitioned, and we've got people who just sort of discuss in a general forum. So we've got a real openness, and in a business that's maybe it's a distribution business really at the end of the day. So it's a, you know, it's quite a male dominated business. Lots of people drive trucks and forklifts and all that sort of stuff. So it's really important the whole business has this right to be safe to go to work. So that's a key thing, that nobody should feel when they go to work that they don't feel safe at being who they are. And that's probably the thing that underpins all of it. And I would say that in any environment, our business has embraced it, encourages everyone to embrace it, that wherever you are, you can set that sort of thing in motion.
You really can.
Embrace it. I embrace it.
Embrace
it.
But that took a while.
Product placement.
But what's really interesting is the bit where we're looking for, when, if we might not have learnings, working with Breaks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I can access Spectrum as well.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And we want to do that. We want to share these things with our customers as well as our own business. We have to embed it with us first.
Yeah.
We've even got our head office. We have sort of zebra crossing. Now that's the colours of the LGBT+.
And anyone refuse to cross it?
No.
Okay.
And I've been in our distribution centres. We have all the different flags so that people understand what the different flags mean.
Ruth, at Stowe, what would you've got this situation that's occurred, we've talked about Bob and Bianca, how would you go around evidencing your support for their ability to live their best life?
I think if you look at this much more generically and you look at all of these scenarios, it's about giving your team members the skills to have, I guess, what I would call tender conversations. We don't need to brand these as difficult conversations. We just need to give people the confidence to start talking. And we were talking to a CQC inspector yesterday who shared with us, you know, she was looking at a sex and sexuality care plan. And it said the one the person, I don't know if it's a man or woman, like to wear a woolly jumper? I mean, what does this tell us about their sex or sexuality or any level of preferences? And, you know, we need to get much better at training our teams to just delve a bit deeper in a really sensitive way, because we're not improving anyone's life by saying that they like to wear woolly jumpers apart from keeping them a bit warmer. True. That's not telling us who they are.
Do you, having experienced or received training, for example, do you feel like the training was helpful? Was it fit for purpose? Is it good enough?
I mean, I certainly think the training around when the LGBT plus, all the different sort of different types of genders, was a learning for me. I did not know all the different ways in which people identified at all. So that's been a massive learning, and that's the thing we've tried to share with our business, is this whole about allowing everybody to be themselves. And I think it's only if you understand more about what that means, do you understand what it means to be yourself. And that's one of the biggest learnings, that opportunity to learn what it is to be able to be yourself.
I think there's a real shortage in terms of elderly care. If, you know, if you run an LD service, I know that there's training out there to support your team members much more effectively in understanding sex and relationships. But that's almost completely pushed to one side for elderly people. And I think we've got an awful lot more to do here.
Alistair?
Yeah, just thinking back to this training element, one of the things that was lovely in this particular situation was that one of our Filipino staff, who was actually gay himself and loved to dress up, he spent a lot of time giving this gentleman the time to feel that he dressed well, and there was a real relationship built between the two. And I think that helped to change the impressions and the understanding of other team members, because he was such a positive mentor to this gentleman, supporting other people in understanding. So I think it's, and it's also not putting labels. I hate this LGBT stuff. I'm a gay man. I got married about 3 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
But I don't want to be identified. Thank you. It's all right. But I don't want to be identified with a label. You know, I am Alistair. I'm a Scotsman. I'm a bit daft. I have a great job, and I love people, and that's enough. Yeah.
Right. So this is going to be this might be the, I've saved the good one till the end. What do you do? Sam's already scared. What do you do if you have a member of your team? Now, we've all expressed, like, yes, we're all on board, we're on side, we're everything's great. What do you do if you've got maybe a team member that might be a little bit uncomfortable going into that room that day and supporting that resident? What are we going to do around that? You've put them through training, you've supported them with education, learning, and maybe very gentle, supportive experience. I just turn around and say, no, I don't want to. I'm not happy with the way that it makes me feel. What is our solution around those sorts of experiences? Because I think that's important to encounter, because we have a duty of care to our residents, of course, but we have that return duty of care and our values to the people that work with us. So if that was a situation that occurred, how might you handle it? Anyone? And it doesn't matter if it's wrong or it's right, this is just a way to express maybe the challenging bit of that conversation.
So, this goes back to how we recruit. Do you hear that thing? Shall I move? It goes back to how we recruit, first of all, because if we're recruiting and being open and transparent about who we support and who we are, then actually people will self-select out. If we're saying you will be looking after people from all spectrums, from the whole community, then actually, if we're saying that from the outset and it's on our website and it's really clear and you apply to work with us, you then know that actually this is part of what will be asked of you. Is it different when you've got an established team who have been there a long time and then have this happen in their home? We had it in my previous company. And I think there's a fairness to be had. Some people, most things where people show anger, judgment, everything else, come from a base of fear. Mm-hmm. And so we have to work with that fear, and we have to help them work with that fear.
So we have an amazing, so we've talked about care homes and maybe residential settings, domiciliary care, I told you I was going to call on you, domiciliary care, where are you starting with this? Either or can take it. Phone a friend.
I'll pass over to Megan in a sec. We have got quite a good situation really to talk about, but I think we provide complex care. So we do a lot of matchmaking based on the client prior to providing the care in the first place. So we will do lots of meet and greets. We do lots of use technology, video profiling for our staff. So I'm sure we will come across it, but we often know the wants and wishes of the client prior to commencing care, and therefore we are finding the exact match. We actually call it knitting our staff. So we'll get a profile of what type of staff the client will want around them, and then we'll actually go out and build that staff team around them. But I'm going to hand over to Megan just to talk about one
situation. Go on, Megan, finish us off.
So we have a temporary staffing agency as well that runs as a separate business towards our complex provider. And we provide a nurse who had transitioned into a female, into a care home. And she was working in a part of the home that had two nurses. And when she arrived on shift, the nurse on shift said, "You can't work on this floor, we can't have two males." And our nurse said, "No, I am a female." And the nurse was like, "You're not a female." She was like, "No, I am. Like, I am a female." The nurse from the home of the client went away and come back and said, "Okay, we accept that you're female, but you still can't work on this floor. We think your skill set would be better in a different part of the home." And obviously our nurse raised that with us and was like, it was very clear that it wasn't my skill set that they were matching. It was that piece around like my gender. So myself and Mike went in to meet with the client. We have a really good relationship with the care group. And the issue that the home manager raised with us was that the nurse who identified as female doesn't kind of her gender, she couldn't read her gender off her body. So I don't want to use stereotypical words, but she didn't present as what some females would look like. And her worry was that when she was providing care for people who lived with dementia, that there may be some like females who would resist getting care from this person, even though they were a female, identified as a female, they didn't kind of present as one. So we had a really it was a really difficult situation that we had there, but our nurse was really open about it and worked with the care group to provide kind of like training with their staff, and it was a learning piece for our client then off the back of that, which was really good. But it was a really like unique situation for us to go into and think from both sides you could understand where the issue was there.
Brilliant, thank you so much. So that brings the care show on that note to a close, which essentially is make sure that you communicate, there's transparency, there's candidness, you have candor in your duty anyway. So maybe just make sure that that's reflected in a 360 perspective in a holistic way, and that your values run through every single one of your service delivery options. So everyone on the panel, thank you very much. See you in, no doubt, London, probably in November. No, this is already that one. So April, probably. But thank you so much to everyone. Happy birthday, James, and have a great care show. Bye.
The Outstanding Society is a community interest company, and membership is free to all, not just those who have achieved an outstanding rating. If you would like to join, please visit our website or follow the links in this episode.